You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
If you think of anthropologists as academics who research esoteric, far-flung indigenous cultures, well, think again. They may be studying you. While you're enjoying a party at home, one of them may be taking notes on everything that's going on. And that's what Graham Wood uncovered for his recent article called Anthropology, Inc. in the March issue of The Atlantic. He joins us now by phone along with Min Liskovsky, an ethnographic researcher who's featured in the piece, and she's here with us in the studio. Welcome.
Hi.
I hope you're not researching me right now. Hasn't studying home parties been an aspect of your work?
Has it?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's been a part of a couple projects that I've been on.
And what are you looking for when you're doing that kind of research?
We're looking at things that can't be captured by quantitative data, like how much people spent on a bottle. Those things are the things that companies already know about consumers and what consumers want. What we want to know is what people are actually doing, the timing of things, how people's social interactions interplay with what they're consuming and when, and all of the little minutiae that may not seem that important but actually shape what people think of when they have a party.
Well, how do you get invited to something like that? Do any of the other guests or the hosts know what you're doing?
I think that we have Graham brought up a bunch of ethical issues, which I think were...
Which we'll get into, of course. But I'm sure my listeners are already going tick, 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 tick.
But I feel that my role isn't that of like a spy or a secret shopper. I am honest about what I'm doing. And I find that people are really interested in talking to me. And the ones who are feel uneasy about talking to me, I don't talk to them.
Well, Graham, how did you find out about this? Are we talking about corporate anthropology here, or is much of this still academic anthropology?
Well, the corporate side of it is definitely informed by the academic side of it. I found out about it originally because I happened to live with an anthropologist, an academic anthropologist, and in the course of looking for academic jobs, it came up that, in fact, the largest employers of anthropologists aren't universities, but the largest single one is probably the U.S. government. And then after that, they say it might be Microsoft. So it turns out the corporate world has a great use for anthropologists, and you know that they're interested in anything that will tell them how best to design their products, how best to sell their products. And of course, we have whole branches of social science that are extremely valuable to them, and anthropology is one of them.
Well, Microsoft obviously doesn't care about coming to my party, because we're not sitting around the computer. But what would they? They'd go into an office?
They would, or they would go into a home. You know, we have personal computers, and we have very particular ways that we use them. And when I say we, I mean Americans. But if you're breaking into a new market, you might find that a personal computer has different connotations, or even just the idea of the personal has a different connotation in a place like, say, China, which would be a huge, partially untapped market for home personal computers. So Microsoft would definitely need to know exactly how does a person from China who's buying a computer for his home for the first time think about the way that's going to be used. Is it something that's personal? Is it something that's a family device? And by sending an anthropologist into that person's home, the anthropologist can come back with, Min can speak to the kinds of details that they find, but it would be a full report that would help Microsoft know whether they're going to be alienating a potential market or whether they're going to be fitting their needs perfectly.
So are most of the people they're hiring employed by Microsoft, or are they freelancers? And how many are we talking about?
Well, I asked Microsoft how many people are in their anthropological unit, and they wouldn't give me a specific number, but we'd be talking about a unit that has functioned probably autonomously within Microsoft's research division, and that's been there for quite some time. They would be largely people who have at least some academic training in anthropology, if not a PhD, as some of the colleagues of Min have had at the consultancy in New York City, Red Associates.
And I mean, that's where you work at Red Associates? I guess they do work for companies that can't afford to have their own departments, like Microsoft.
Yeah.
And what kinds of clients?
In many different areas. In pharmaceutical, in consumer electronics, in other kinds of beverages and foods.
But I'm not sure I understand what you really can find out. You go to a party. I've been to parties.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think there's all that much new that I can learn about what happens at a party, other than some people are nice to talk to. Some look over your shoulder to see if there's somebody more interesting who they'd prefer to talk to. Sometimes the alcohol is and the food is of higher quality than others. But it's really just the mix of people that makes a party a success, isn't it?
I think you're absolutely right. But I think that people who have spent their entire careers in the spirits industry, they just think alcohol, spirits constantly, and it's all about that for them. And I think they, because their livelihood is all wrapped up in that, they may kind of lose touch with the fact that it is about people and it's not actually about the drinks, but how drinks support people.
Well, what have you been surprised by when you have gone to a home party, for example? In the end, are you like a party goer, or are you always thinking, oh, gee, I'm going to have to run into the bathroom to write this down?
I think somewhere in between.
Do people worry about you running to the bathroom as often as you do?
No, I think that's a common problem for women at parties anyway. So, there's an anthropologist called Hortense Powdermaker, which I think is a great name, and she has a book called Stranger and Friend. I may be butchering it. But I think that ideally an anthropological researcher occupies a space in between those.
Now, was this what you originally thought you were going to go into when you studied anthropology?
No, but I can't say, to be honest, I can't say that I really knew what I wanted to do when I entered my graduate program.
You say that people say one thing about what they do, but actually do something quite different. How does that work?
I think that it's important for me in my work that we kind of catch people, find that people represent their behavior in one way, and when we observe them, it's another way. But I think it's important to respect consumers and not represent them as being dishonest or not knowing themselves. I think that there's just the difference between reporting your behavior on a survey or if someone calls you up with a marketing, a bunch of questionnaires, and the way that you report your idealized view of what you do versus what you actually do.
So how do you find out whether whether they have told, they're not lying, are they? They're enhancing or they're just distorting a bit to make themselves look better?
No, I think they're speaking what they believe to be the truth, and it's important what they think of as the important part of a party. But actually, something that you said just a second ago, Leonard, is a good example of this. You talked about how you might view a party, and you might think about the quality of the alcohol that's being served. Well, I think that one of the things that Min found was that the quality of the alcohol that's being served is something that people might mention as something that's important to them. But in fact, when they present the alcohol to the host, what really turns out to be important is something more like the ritual of giving, something more like the story of where the alcohol came from. And so people might say that they want to have something like a laboratory-grade vodka that's perfect for mixing cocktails. But in fact, if you observe them, it's not that they've lied. They really do believe that that's the way that they are thinking of their alcohol. But an anthropologist who's observing and has this toolkit of an ethnographer knows what it's like to watch a group of people and see what the sort of unwritten rules of their behavior is, can tell you that turns out not to be the most important and meaningful aspect of the alcohol.
My guests are Graham Wood, who is a contributor to Atlantic Magazine, and his article, Anthropology, Inc., is in the current issue, the March issue. One of the people who he profiles is Min Liskovsky, who's an ethnographic researcher. and she's with me in the studio. Do the people you are researching, men, ever find out that you've been studying them? I know that if you had done it at one of my parties, I probably would be quite upset.
We always operate with release forms and informed consent. So when I introduce, so I'm brought to a party by a person who I've already interviewed and been working with for a couple hours, at least even a day, and so they know who I am and they know why I'm there. And I, when I introduce myself to people, I will also tell them why I'm there.
Oh, you'll tell them why you're there, and then they're not going to tell you the truth. No one, I wouldn't. The minute I knew that I was part of a research project, I probably would change things a bit.
I think that's why we do longer projects. So we'll spend, you know, I'll spend 5, 6, 7 hours at a party. So if I were at a party with you and you felt uncomfortable, you'd probably just avoid me, or you would alter your behavior for a while, but probably not the entire night.
Now, what about you, Graham? You tagged along with a couple of researchers on some projects. Did it feel at all intrusive to you?
It certainly might have felt intrusive if the people hadn't been carefully briefed about my presence there as a journalist and fully anonymized in the article. So they seemed like they were speaking pretty openly. And in any case, since the researchers I tagged along with were there for quite a long time in these people's homes walking around, if the people were uncomfortable or if they wanted to put up some kind of charade, it would have actually been really quite difficult for them to do so, because for 5 hours it's difficult to keep any kind of act up.
One of the places you went to involved a family in Forest Hills where the home was kept strictly kosher with two kitchens. What was being explored there?
That was a research project for a kitchen appliance company, and they wanted to know exactly how people think about their kitchens. So they went to many kitchens, not just kosher households, but in this one in particular, it was a matter of some curiosity whether the house was being kept completely kosher, whether there were some minute violations of the law, and they wanted to find out when someone thinks about her kitchen, in this case, it was the mother of the household who was showing us around, exactly how does she think about her refrigerator? Does she want it to be climate controlled to the tenth of a degree, or is it something that's more more intangible? And in fact, that's what they found. They found that there were particular spaces in the house, not just the kitchen, that were kept as sacred spaces, and sacred spaces not just in a like strictly Jewish sense, but in the way that anthropologists have seen sacred spaces and seen them demarcated in different societies for now decades. And so once you've made that observation, then you can start applying perhaps some of the things that anthropologists have seen in other societies and pass that information along to the seller.
Were some basic assumptions that companies had undone by this kind of research?
I can't speak to any very specific ones because the nature of these kinds of home visits are that they're very general. So they'd begin with just photographing the person's home, everywhere in the person's home. So any little detail that might have been spotted in the photograph could be revisited in the write-up of the research project. But yes, you would find that if what matters is the sacredness of the kitchen space, then it matters much less whether very specific things like the ability of, say, a refrigerator to say that you're out of milk, that doesn't matter as much as the ability of the person who's working in the kitchen to say to the world and to telegraph to the world by the way that she arranges it, that it's her space and that nothing can violate it.
But didn't Samsung's thoughts about some of its products change?
Yes. So that's a separate project. But actually, Min's company, Red, was working for Samsung. Samsung at one point was thinking of its televisions, for example, as these devices that they wanted to get to engineer perfectly for the resolution of the screen, for the size of the screen, etc. But an anthropologist looking at the way that people actually relate to their home TVs, etc., would find that they were actually relating to it more as furniture. And so what mattered less was not it wasn't the pixel count so much as how this fit as say, a sofa might fit in your room, or how the design was as a physical object that you relate to in your living space.
Now, Min, you haven't gone back to college and gotten your degree as an anthropologist, but you've studied anthropology. Have you gotten any backlash from academic anthropologists who might feel that you sold out to the corporate world?
No, I haven't.
Do some do both? If I were an associate at some college and not making a lot of money, might I moonlight doing this sort of work?
I'm sure there are people, but I don't know any.
Do academic anthropologists follow a code of ethics? Because we've heard about all sorts of problems in the past about whether we disrupted some indigenous people. That same sort of thing could happen here, couldn't it?
That's true. And many applied anthropologists or ethnographic or design researchers do follow a code of ethics.
Many do, you said. That means not all?
Well, not everyone who does design research is considers themselves an anthropologist or an ethnographer. So there are many people who are out doing qualitative research who are not, who don't put themselves in this community.
Min, thank you so much. Min Liskovsky, I'll be looking out for you at any party I go to in the near future, and watch what I say. She is one of the people featured in an article called Anthropology, Inc., written by Graham Wood, who's a contributor to Atlantic Magazine. It's in the current issue of Atlantic, the March issue. Thank you both so much for being on our show.
Thank you.
Thanks.